In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
You walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. We continue on the thread of exiting the reincarnation trap and examining the nature of reality through the perspective of someone who has studied anomalous trauma and alien abductees for decades. Our guest was mentioned in Howdy McCoskey's book, Exit the Cave. And here the author is questioning the criticism of reincarnation traps and the authenticity of karma. Quote, "This gets even more challenging," McCoskey writes, "when we begin to realize that many of the moments of our lives are being directly manipulated by parasitic entities." Eve Lorgan wrote an excellent book on this subject titled Alien Love Bite. "Besides, if someone has had 1,000 lifetimes, surely that person must have learned everything by now, given that most of those lives would have been fraught with intense suffering. Does someone really need 997 lives out of 1,000 full of pain to learn?" End quote. We talk more about the energy harvest cycle and related parasitic entities giving shape to the false reality concept. We also discuss the process of awakening to full lucidity of our eternal selves, of what Jesus Christ was known to describe as eternal remembrance. Our guest, author Eve Lorgan, is a professional hypnotherapist and counselor. She is the author of The Love Bite, Alien Interference of Human Relationships, and her other book is titled The Dark Side of Cupid. Evie was a close associate of the late Barbara Bartlett and is dedicated in continuing and expanding the work of the late Dr. Carla Turner. Evie, welcome to Another News.
Thank you for having me, Jeff.
Well, I was reading Robert Monroe's book, Journeys Out of the Body. He talks about when attempting to astral travel and leave the body, he found himself facing backward instead of his consciousness pointing forward where our faces are. He was turned around, looking through the back of his body. He saw a hole to what looked like infinite space. And I'm pointing this out in context of entities accessing humans, possibly through this hole. Evie, you have on your website, evelorgan.com, images from a French-Canadian psychic healer who was able to illustrate these access points and the entities attached to humans. And this is not unlike with children's dolls that have an access point on their back, such as a battery door. Evie, would you please talk more about this access point?
And I think those images were first from Stéphane Cardenau, who was an energy healer who actually wrote his own book and had at one time a lot of images that were available on the internet. And they were very well done, with specifically types of beings that would hover or stand close to or behind someone and link in through a grasping or a tube of energy to certain chakra points that were basically on the, I think they were on the back side of the body. Like one of them was the crown, some of them was the heart, some of them was the dantian or the root chakras. And then the appearance of the beings were sometimes reptilian looking, and then some of them looked a little velociraptor-ish with long, narrow heads and bat-like wings, and usually taller than the person, but usually from behind, which is interesting, the observation that he did, because even the backside of the body that represents something archetypically, if I remember correctly. But it's vague to me right now, but there's different chakra points in which these are observed to connect with, for sure. And either tubes of energy or grasping. And sometimes those sensations are felt very distinctly by the person, you know, with energy drains or just grinding sensations or just weird, sometimes pain even.
Yes, it makes me think about the puppet master part of this where, okay, not only do you have the louche extraction element, but it seems like we're born with a built-in food receptacle in our backs, yet there's very little information about this vulnerability. And in the bigger picture of controlling society, where particular leaders move through the ranks of power and the puppet is off the strings, then Robert Monroe potentially identified the access point for an astral entity to take over the controls of that leader. So you have a manipulation of society as well.
Yeah. Well, it certainly appears to be so. You know, my introduction into this and even understanding or starting to come to, let's say, personal conclusions in my life based on my work and observations with alien abduction experiencers or people who had paranormal love obsessions that were directed by third-party entities, like in my book, The Love Bite and The Dark Side of Cupid, because I was led to come to the conclusion that there was a force that was manipulating and directing some of these things, overseers and interlopers and intruders even, that appear to be very focused on what they want and not necessarily what we want. So that brought me to the conclusion that there must be some spiritual warfare dynamic going on here in other dimensional points of access in our reality. And so this is when I actually came across not only the work of Barbara Bartholik and the late Dr. Carla Turner and, you know, my own work with abductions and Roger Lear and Daryl Sims and many, many researchers. But at the time, I think it was in the mid-90s when the James Robinson edition of the Nag Hammadi Library had come out and became more popular for people who are interested in the non-canonical, what they called the Gnostic tractates and scriptures about things that happened or were written about early creation, early Jewish history, Hellenistic writings, and early gospels, and the gospels that were taken out of canonical scriptures from the, you know, 325 AD Constantine Council of Nicaea, whatever that is. Nicene, sorry. I don't remember. Anyway, so reading these Gnostic tractates about the archons, there's three in particular that talk about these rulers. Like one of them is called The Reality of the Rulers, On the Origin of the World, and the there's another one. There's three main ones that discuss basically the reality of the Demiurge, this figure that exists in the lower pleromic realm of creation, which includes many realms, including the earth and our reality. And so those descriptions and what happened with Christ's true followers and things that were hidden basically describe what we're experiencing today with people who have the perception to know there's these interlopers that are trying to prevent us from coming into contact either with our true spiritual nature or remembrance and realization, so that we can be trapped here in a recycling process without the true ascension. So basically that, you know, clued me in on a deeper level to actually have more faith in the real reason Christ came here. And so it's kind of, I think, limited and breadcrumbed or kind of hidden in mystery in the canonical books. But anybody who has a really close relationship, I believe, with Christ in a true relational and somewhat, I say Gnostic, because at some point there's a realization of your remembrance in him, in the eternal nature that is really the promise of salvation, because we're in fragmented consciousness here in these avatar bodies in this, quote, matrix, if you want to call it. So that's actually the trap. And so our freedom from that is what Christ really wanted to show and exemplify. But I think a lot of this was hidden and breadcrumbed so that we don't really get it. And then, of course, we know through history many people who were those who remembered or demonstrated these qualities of remembrance. You can call them prophets or people like Jesus. They soon after they come here, a lot of times their truth or whatever they did became hijacked by some infiltrated counterfeit spirit operating system or people or beings, or beings controlling people, let's say like the ones you just talked about, who are like hovering over people and linking to their chakras and basically kind of guiding them like puppets. So I think this is what's happening in humanity with many of the systems of narratives of belief about our reality, including religion, government, medicine, you name it. And then human operators who are their puppets, more or less, whether they are deceived or doing willfully is not clear, but they're certainly agents of their control operating, just like in the Matrix movie, right? So that's pretty much observed clearly and palpably in the alien abduction UFO research phenomena, like in the paranormal stuff and the entity interference and the spiritual warfare and the, you know, the men in black kind of stuff and the people trying to prevent you from telling the truth about the real thing behind UFOs or whatever it is. That becomes very real if you research this for decades and experience it yourself, that like, yeah, there's something going on here. And I think Robert Monroe in his book definitely was on to something years ago, even before this became more well popularized, because the way it became popularized is really with people like, well, I don't know, like myself and many in the phenomena who like, hey, this is a loose feeding thing. This is a manipulation. This is a mind control thing. This is, you know, recycling. There's so much more here. So I think it's really fascinating how Robert Monroe actually perceived this loose feeding.
Evie, while you were answering, I thought of another question. Is the salvation from Jesus Christ to use this time in the grace of God to teach each other how to end the reincarnation trap, to exit out of the demiurge system where archons are feeding on us? Otherwise, we're likely to get tricked into another avatar on Earth under the pretense of more lessons to learn. Past guest Howdy McCoskey said, we have about 4,000 potentials in one lifetime, and one of those potentials is breaking free of the reincarnation trap in our life, and that's preparing for the afterlife and not getting manipulated emotionally to return. He also suggested to learn how to astral travel while you're here. He writes more about this in his book, Falling for Truth.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess salvation would be more like a freedom from the enslavement. But in some of the Gnostic tractates, I find it interesting because as one becomes closer in their relationship with Christ connected to the all, let's say all Father of eternal beingness, of which we are children of the eternal, as we become closer and closer in this relational aspect, there comes a point of what I believe, a Gnostic eternal remembrance, which is what some would say one's identity in Christ, but it's really eternal remembrance of the fullness of beingness of our original state. Some people might call this the oversoul. And so this is what in some of the Gnostic writings, they called it acquaintance, that our ability really to, quote, ascend, if you would want to call it that, is based on the fullness of the deepness of lucidity of your eternal acquaintance, which is really your realized remembrance of eternal beingness that is so lucid that you know you're co-dreaming this. So in a lucid dream, as a model of understanding, and this is what the yogis do, and the Tibetan Buddhist dream yoga is a practice that they do to prepare for, quote, the afterlife, so they don't have to get recycled. As you become more and more lucid within meditation and dream states, in your dual projected dream states, but also in the clear light oneness that is beyond duality. And so once you practice this, you learn, like when you start lucid dreaming, you have more power in the dream, not necessarily to control the whole dream, but you can bring forth things in the dream. You could manifest, you can create. And when you are in this state, you realize like, oh, I'm dreaming. Now I know I can fly. So the deeper the lucidity, the more you know, and the more you know, you just do and be. So it's like, yeah, I could fly, and you just start flying. So you defy the physics of that realm because you're lucid of co-dreaming. So I think this has to do with our power to somehow transcend or outwit or become invisible to the archons who want to recycle us through these different methods, which is actually talked about in the Gospel of Mary, which is one of the Gnostic tractates, which is fragmentary, but there's enough there to show that supposedly some of the early teachings that Jesus did with his close disciples, Mary in particular, but all of them really, that, you know, when you die, you're going to come upon these governors who will make you say that you have to go back and do this and that, or make you feel guilty, all this other stuff, and then have to go back, like this whole learning process. But in reality, when you come to the full remembrance of your being, one of the teachings was to state that you are from the eternal kingdom of the Father of light, of the eternal unbegotten. I don't know how it was spoken, but there's a way to basically encounter them in that transition or bypass them altogether in some way. So I think that when we have that eternal remembrance, which is really what Christ wanted us to be and remember, and like his whole thing, but I don't think people fully get it because we're in the process of that remembrance. We're all in the process of awakening to the fullness of lucidity of our eternal beingness. So that's how I believe it works, and that's how we can kind of get out of that recycling process. So there's different people who've had NDEs of different kinds where they've encountered different things. But that's just my opinion on it based on what I personally experienced with Christ, which is really, really hard to explain. But the one take home, I think, idea that I would bring across was that the fullness of realization of eternal beingness and the freedom of the kingdom of the Father, of my original state of being, where I came from, in him, from him, is what Christ showed to me in a moment after 3 days and three nights of intense longing and prayer without sleep. And it was a blessing. I believe it was grace through faith of revealed truth in him, because of him, and by his grace. Because without that realization, we would be as if trapped here forever in enslavement. And it doesn't mean we don't have eternal beingness. It just would be as if we were forever enslaved. Because if you don't remember and we stay in fragmented consciousness, it might as well be, you know, forever enslavement. So I think our real experience should be we come to whatever realm we desire, and then we just remember and we experience it, and we can get in and out like a traveler who's just exploring this wonderful universe, you know?
Definitely. I remember how Howdy McCoskey was mentioning in the past interview, we could have experienced a million different lives here on Earth and not know it, considering we're infinite beings. And how long might it take for the average soul to learn, hey, I'm in a trap? And I thought that was interesting because I didn't consider a million times. I was thinking maybe 20, maybe 40 different lives before you could realize the reincarnation trap. But he said it could be a lot more. Okay, then how could you have a millions of past lives considering the given timeline of humans? And it may be that if you might be placed back to a different timeline in the reincarnation cycle, you could be placed back into the days of the Romans, the Cathars, something like that. In this theory, it does allow for multiple lives. If you're an infinite being, those numbers will certainly add up.
Yeah, I think there's such thing as parallel world simultaneous existences, like even within our current incarnational body. And I guess it's because I've been watching this Man in the High Castle series, which is based on Philip K. Dick's book from years ago, about, you know, when the Nazis took over on an alternate reality Earth where the Nazis won the war for the East Coast occupation and then the West Coast was won by the Japanese and then you had this neutral zone. But in that whole series is the, you know, the exploration and the realization of parallel world transmission, like of information based on these films that were transferred over of the parallel worlds, the different outcomes or timelines that occurred. And it's so fascinating because I believe there's something to this because sometimes people actually have memories of alternate selves in parallel world incarnational, like our same body, our same identity. And you can actually remember them in dream states sometimes. And I think Howdy actually mentioned that on one of his, he might have mentioned that in an interview or in the book excerpt you gave me. I'm not sure if it was him, but people who actually remember and they're having fragments of memories that are like dreams within dreams. And I think this is beyond just like dissociation or current life trauma. I think there really are aspects of tapping into our identities that are existing in these parallel multiple world realities or even other lives, which Philip K. Dick actually did talk about in his 1978 interview, where I think he talked about how he would experience a simultaneous life as a Roman slave in another era, which was like, would be a past life, but he experienced it as current parallel life reality, like another incarnation, like another life. So I think maybe that's why he was probably much more switched on than we could even imagine in his books and what he wrote about, because I believe that the Nazis ran into a lot of this technology. And that's why the MKUltra paperclip and the secret space program things have been streamlined to such an extent of, you know, what they're doing now with these people. It's no longer this simple Manchurian candidate kind of thing. This is, it goes into parallel worlds, other dimensional realities, you know, clone bodies, you know, all kinds of things that I think they tapped into this technology of going in and out of time. Yeah, in and out of time and even reversing time, like they do with the 20 and back, if you've heard of that.
I have not heard of that.
Okay. Yeah, it's kind of complex.
Evie, I'd like to transition back into the energy harvest cycle because of all of your work with countless abductees and multiple clients with anomalous trauma that you've interviewed and worked with through the years. What are your thoughts about the controllers among us within the simulation? It's clear our societies are intentionally corralled into technological backwater. We've recently experienced a hard reset with the engineered pandemic and mandatory injections. An honest examination of what happened supports the viewpoint that there are networks of facilitators for the archons among us. If you would, Evie, please talk about your thoughts on these controller dynamics.
Well, there's so much. I think that you could sense it even in our individual lives of once you pursue truth, you know, with all your heart, all your mind, all your soul, especially about things that have happened in your life that remain mysterious, like alien abductions, where there's an amnesia aspect. And then where there's a lot of smoke and mirrors and blowback to prevent you from finding out those experiences, then you come to start to conclude, well, yeah, there's some power, some entity, some organization that doesn't want me to remember. And I'll just use my own personal experience since that kind of clued me into there's something going on, not only on a micro individual level of experience, but also a macro level with, you know, groups, communities, governments, maybe even worlds and other races and beings from other dimensions, you know. There's a deep knowing inside. You just know, how can I say it, like Neo in the Matrix, where you just know something ain't right here. Or you know there was an aspect of confusion of a memory lapse or missing time with an abduction. And you want to, you know, search the truth through various methods like hypnotherapy and regressions and dream yoga. And that's what I was doing, lucid dreaming and dream yoga. Then I ran into a couple of things that kind of stopped me in a psychological almost as if a trip wire went off and alarmed something inside of me and outside of me to deviate from that process of finding the truth, which was actually, it's still revealing itself to me now. But what happened in my life was that then I got hit over the head with basically a love bite in the process of doing research with, you know, alien abductions. And then I didn't know about like these like engineered love obsessions, but it happened to me. And then I had some deja vu memories of this. And then pretty soon I was on this parallel deviation of this whole love obsession thing. And then, of course, that's how I really met up with Barbara Bartholik and Dr. Carla Turner's work and James Bartley and myself and another colleague. We started a support group, and because that developed into learning other people's experiences, which were similar, of a type of interference factor that wanted to prevent us from knowing the truth, but to try to show us or entertain us with other distractions and identifications. And this, see, oh my God, it's so much. But yes, the interference is there. And there's groups, human and non-human, that don't want us to get to the fullness of realization and memory, because then that would bring us to be sovereign. So they couldn't loose feed us or do whatever they're doing or dominate and control. So it leads into larger and larger groups of humans run by non-human powers of control that exist beyond the regular human lifespan. Like, I don't want to call them immortal beings, because there's a type of beings that interact with these, let's say, Illuminati families or these hidden ones, hidden families that have made blood oaths to them, maybe like these false gods that they talked about in the Bible, you know, the Baals and the Ashtaroth and all these other ones, so many. They all have many names, but they're the same ones that always seem to require blood sacrifice to control bloodlines and corrupt them. So they corrupt and hybridize in them so that they are more dominated and easily manipulated and loose fed to carry out the agendas of the false gods, which I think are like the archons and the demiurgic ones that they called the governors and the archons in the Gnostic tractates. So they corrupt us well enough by making us believe in their lies, and then they hybridize with us, then that causes an adulteration and a corruption of our, not only our physical genetics, but I think our energy bodies and our consciousness to be more fragmented and, well, stupid, to be honest. Like, it takes away our memory of original beingness through the corruption of the hybridized bodies and energy bodies. So that makes it easier for us to be enslaved. That's what I think they meant. And I'm kind of going on a tangent here because I want to make a point about when they talk about sin in some of the Gnostic tractates. There's a clarification, supposedly, that Jesus said that, you know, sin is not as we understand it, like, oh, you know, evil actions and being wrong. And that has an element of like, yeah, sin is like doing stupid shit, believing lies. But it also means adulteration of original blueprint and corruption of original nature. So if we corrupt the original nature, or even, you know, the genetic blueprint, like GMO vegetables that make you sick, this is what's happened, I think, to the human avatar bodies and even our energy bodies, because it limits our consciousness so that we don't remember who we are. So we're easily misled, right? That's how I see it. And so that's why it's so easy to mislead large groups of people through corruption and causing us to believe lies and create and self-doubt of this deep, deep thing we know inside, that we know there's something not right and we can't put our finger on it and we can't make logic out of it, but we just know deep inside. So that's what we must build. It's like that golden seed of eternal beingness and remembrance that will activate, I think, the awakening of truth within and without, and that has a purity to it that is very powerful.
Carissa Conti, who is a colleague of yours, Evie, in a recent interview about the engineered pandemic, she fortunately went into detail writing about the facilitators who went along and injected these people or put the intubators onto people while knowing in their heart that this was not the way to go, not the right action to take. But there were so many people who went along with the narrative, and it didn't make sense. How could this coordination exist on this level. I suspect people don't realize that there are these facilitators among us, whether they're conscious or not. Would you talk more about this social anomaly?
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, I think some are definitely aware, like in the families, just call it the ruling families, and they're people who do their jobs. Sometimes they're under mind control to do it, because most of those ruling families, if you don't do things willingly, a lot of times they raise you up as a traumatized, what they call multiple personality, ritual abuse person that has a job and a skill, and then they create them to just do the agenda of the families that are already run, that are taken over. But then some of them, I think, do it willingly if they agree that they want to do that. They don't, maybe then they don't have to traumatize and torture them, but I think it's pretty much how they do it, you know? And so they make you easily mind-controlled to make sure they carry out these agendas. So they educate people to believe that these certain narratives are the truth. So there's many innocent people who, even left-brain doctors, you know, and scientists. I mean, I say left-brain because I was a scientist. I know what it's like to be a scientist and work with PhDs and people who, they're brilliant, but sometimes there's something missing on the intuitive side. I just say that as in jest because I know that I was like that at one point in my life. But anyway, yeah, so if they just can mind control people to believe these things to be true, then they think they're doing the right thing by carrying out the agendas of what they think is for your health. And then there's just the order followers who their job is more important, or they don't want any problems in their life, so they just, you know, follow the orders regardless of the consequences of which they know they might even be doing, unless you're re-traumatized and forced into amnesia again and then re-mind controlled to do the same thing, which they do to people, by the way, who wake up too much, and then they just traumatize you to forget what happened, like resets, you know? But yeah, I mean, I it angers me. And the parallel that I would use based on history would be like the Nazi brown shirts, you know, the order following Nazi brown shirts. They're just, you know, carrying out the Reich and what they're mind controlled to believe is right. And they'll be easily led to just be a, you know, there's a name for it in contemporary vernacular, you know, the Karens who want to propose the agendas of the people, you know, doing these things. People who know and people who don't know. And then see, it's like once you know and you're carrying out the orders and you know it's causing harm, you know, I think there's a consequence to that, because that's like a choice to do something, let's just say that could be murdering people, millions. So that's not good. But, and it reminds me of something else, but I don't know if it's too soon to jump to this topic. Well, when people, let's say, make choices based on, okay, they don't want trouble. Yeah, you know, they don't want trouble, you know, so they're just going to follow orders, but they kind of have a feeling, you know, this ain't right. And then a lot of people are getting sick, and a lot of people are dying. You're like, I don't know, you know, but I got to do it. It's my job, you know, I'm a security person, you know, people got to do it. It's just how it is. And so they just follow orders, even though there's that gut instinct inside, which their spirit of truth is telling them that it ain't right. Okay, so there's consequences to the separation from the spirit of truth, which will reveal itself to you in you that knows the truth and would want to act on the truth for a better overall outcome in the long run. But if people make the quick choice of they just want to be comfortable, they don't want to listen to the truth, so they're just going to shut that door on the spirit of truth and follow orders, and pretty soon they just believe the lies that they're pumping out there. Okay, so that's the same as, this is what I'm making the parallel here, because the problem is, and because of the clients I work with, okay, this is why it's such a reality for me, people who have gone through what I call narcissistic abuse and complex trauma to such an extent that they've been very traumatized, maybe dissociated, or have experienced severe abuse by certain personality disordered people, such as those who have narcissistic personality disorder, or psychopaths, or addicts or pedophiles or people in these mind-controlled satanic ritual abuse families where a primary caregiver has been so taken over by their unhealed trauma and the choices they made to be taken over by the false mask of the identity they're choosing to cover up the truth of their shame part or their traumatized child. That's the original self that had to be shut down in the basement, and they put a false identity on top of it. And this is what narcissistic personality disorder is. It's a false identity covering up the shame abused child that's trapped in the basement who has all these memories and feelings that was the original self. So people who shut out the original self that's connected to God and connected to the truth, then they become narcissists. And what do narcissists do? They abuse people and they gaslight people and they do smear campaigns and they don't care how they harm you. So what's so shocking about narcissistic abuse is that it is the perfect model of the operating program of the counterfeit spirit, which is really like what the Bible calls the adversary. So when they have those behaviors and those control systems, which are those behaviors and personality types like psychopaths who rule countries, then we know we've got a problem here. And they've shut out the spirit of truth, and they shut out the original spirit of the whoever incarnated in that body. So you're running around with a bunch of possessed people who are run by the counterfeit spirit. That's what we're seeing.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for breaking this down, Evie, because I was going to follow up with asking your views on hybrid human beings among us, or humans that aren't fully souled, which is difficult to grasp. But these types of beings that are not quite human, but they're woven into the fabric of our society. Abductees that talk about the hybrid human operation that's going on claim there's more of them around than we think, and they've infiltrated humanity. I'm guessing that's an ancient story as well, but could they more or less direct the course of humanity or become activated when there are events such as a hard reset?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's been a plan. And this was in the Love Bite book in one of my cases called Mia Ann Jordan, the FBI agent, where he wrote a coded letter talking about the agenda of what the Department of the Navy discovered about not only the reptilians, but the alien greys who had made an agreement with the government back in, I don't know if it was Eisenhower or the one before him, to, you know, abduct people and to hybridize them so that a hybridized species would eventually become the leading rulers of Earth in government and other high positions to carry out the long-term agenda. But they also believe, the Department of the Navy supposedly, that the reptilian hybridization process was actually more dangerous to humans, and they were actually trying to prevent some of that, whereas the alien greys were, they knew that they would eventually, you know, start becoming in power and control over time. And so it seemed like there was a split off between, you know, some, quote, government groups that knew these things were happening, and they knew who were hybrids. And they actually would be sent in on their lives to try to neutralize them, believing that they were hybrids, which is pretty amazing that this case came out like in the 90s, and Bud Hopkins didn't want to touch it because it was my lab stuff. But this particular case in the Love Bite is phenomenal in what it demonstrated even back then, that we have hybrids among us and we have different genetic augmentations and experimentations that have been done and experiments that aliens are doing just to observe the what they call the non-tangible energy fields that would be responsible for the bonding between two people, which in that particular case with Mia and Jordan was actually her son that came from her ovum, but the autosomal DNA was removed and then two different genetic parents was inserted into the ovum in an in vitro fertilization by humans working with alien technology to create a hybrid child that was the mitochondrial son of Mia. And then he got manipulated into a love obsession with her. Like, and she was, I think, 17 years older than him, because that's when they abducted her and took the ovum. So she remembered all this in a regression. It's all written in the case history to show that, you know, there's different kinds of experimentation and hybrids being created. And I think it's more of an augmentation of the original genome with enough sequences. And we don't really know how they're doing this, but Dr. Corrado Malanga of Italy, who's a long-term, you know, researcher and an organic chemist who did alien abduction research and many hypnotic regressions to assess, like, information on what are the aliens doing, that the ones who were more, why don't we say hybridized, there were certain humans that had a higher quotient of, let's say, alien DNA or DNA that was not enough of the original blueprint of humans, so that the eternal spirit, what he called the anima, or the soul, he called it soul or anima, would stay just a little bit outside the body and not be fully embodied, because the resonance. The resonance and the frequency of the body was not enough to sustain the full embodiment of the anima in the body. And so that makes them easier for possession and for the alien consciousness to insert itself in the body and basically dominate the consciousness. So it was like a form of possession and hybridization that could control those people while they still fed off the anima eternal spirit battery to live through us, because they were disconnected from it already. That's why they abduct. So this kind of goes back to, you know, why in the, you know, the Bible they talk about, you know, the fallen angels. Is like, what really happened? You know, like, did they really disconnect from the creator of all and decided to just do their own thing? And then because they disconnected and then they hybridized with humanity, the hybrids who were like the Nephilim turned out to be very corrupted and like bloodthirsty and just like had all these like really awful evil behaviors that just got worse and worse and worse over time because they were disconnected from the original blueprint. So this kind of goes into, are they doing the same kind of thing except doing different variations of the same kind of experiment with humans? Because there's ways to be fully embodied. But I sometimes wonder that our bodies now, I mean, how many times have we been hybridized or augmented through all these different resets, or, you know, how long have we been here on this planet? And that I think the fullness of our spirit and our body, like if we experience the fullness of like the eternal spirit nature, it would blow our circuits, you know? Maybe our brain couldn't handle that. Like, how could our brain handle remembering thousands and thousands of lives and all the emotional components of all those experiences? That would be almost too much for, I think, our bodies. But I do think that there are hybrids, and there are some that I think are malevolent based on the observable behaviors and qualities of them, based on abductees who have had direct experience, physical experience with physical people, you know, who are hybrids. And then there are some who I believe they're not bad, they're not evil or whatever, and they're really good people, and they might have different qualities. They're more psychic, they're more telepathic, they might have different medical and physical issues, but for all practical purposes, they're still very good human beings who have a soul, and I would not judge them, you know?
In a previous show, I mentioned the 2005 film Constantine, where the Angel Gabriel character said, quote, "It's only in the face of horror that you humans truly find your nobler selves." This can be interpreted in how humans in most societies are under constant agitation in various levels, from gang stalking, etheric parasites. Exposed to constant agitation is finding our nobler selves. Is it not really about documenting the human response to adversity as humans figure out a way out of the agitation and seek a more peaceful environment? It seems to me that gang stalking connects with that. You're being studied and that's a primary data they're after. You know, how would the target find a way out of this?
Maybe. Well, it seems like there's a, there's some alien component to it. There's also the malevolent punishing aspect, which is like a narcissistic abuse pattern of the ones that are observed to synchronistically say or do things that are mockeries and insults and interferences to a particular person who's sought the truth, knows the truth, or is being harassed because maybe they're a whistleblower or they're waking up from MKUltra, for example. That's actually common with people who were from MKUltra families, waking up from mind control, alien abductees, or whistleblowers, or people under black magic, sorcery attacks tend to be recipients of a gang stalking type of thing. And so sometimes it's clearly observable from a physical reality where the people who are the gang stalkers are like hired people to do it because they're part of a cult. And the cult gives them orders to, you know, their envelope orders to harass a certain person in a certain way because they're the target. Like in that Brotherhood of the Bell movie, that old movie about the Nazi Bell fraternals, the secret societies, and then they join to get power and this and that, like, you know, like kind of like Freemasons. But in the movie, it was they had this Nazi Bell technology and occult control. And then at some point, they get their marching orders, they get their envelope, and then the envelope, they have a job to do something for the cult. And a lot of times it's to, you know, take out, neutralize, harass, or do something to a person that's considered a threat. And then that person would be the one who's gang stalked. And then the cult members are actually the ones doing the jobs. Somebody reported this to me in the early 2000s, where they were a counselor for a social service agency type of employer, where they would work with different clients in group homes who had mental illnesses or certain kinds of, you know, disability, you know, mental retardation or whatnot, and that these group homes were being used as a test subject for these MKUltra and different kinds of different experimentations by these basically Satanists who bought these group homes and were running it, right? But then if the counselor caught on to too much of the weird stuff that was going on, then they became targeted and gang stalked. And then the way that they became targeted and gang stalked would be the usual behaviors, but then the gang stalkers actually had telepathic ability to hack right into their brain with V2K. And so the person, I remember they reported to me that the people who were hired willingly as agents of these, you know, occult groups working in these capacities of control, they would willingly have implants. He called it standard issue gear implants that would give them the ability to telepathically connect to people and then just basically bombard them with all kinds of, you know, horrible commands and self-doubt, how they would want to drive you crazy, like taunting and mockeries and you're going to die and, you know, just horrible, horrible stuff that these people experience, you know, like telepathic crap. So there's technology and there's people who do this for a job. And then there's people who it seems like they're alien or they're possessed or they're temporarily possessed to do something that's just really out of the ordinary. And then it's as if some temporary thing jumped in their body and then made them do or say something just to mess with that one person who's being gang stalked. So I've had like a whole continuum of reports, but one of the ones that I've gotten relatively recently through a correspondence that I couldn't, you know, I had confidentiality issues, can't report this because, you know, don't want to name names, but, you know, a particular abductee, which many abductees are very perceptive and psychic naturally. Sometimes they're naturally telepathic with aliens or sometimes with other humans or other abductees just have telepathy with each other and they don't know why. So many of these abductees, some of them, they can't help the interactions they're having with these aliens that are, I think, malevolent, okay, like reptilians. And then they'll run into these hybrid people who look perfectly human in their jobs or in their daily life in some capacity where they basically act in gang stalky icky, you know, abusive, narcissistic behaviors to basically keep them isolated, to keep them feeling constantly abused, so they're always, they can never tell the truth, they can never have regular relationships, so they'll keep them from having regular human relationships, love relationships, and then they'll set them up in these love bites with these like horrible narcissists and hosted people, or with aliens, because the aliens want them all to themselves. And so these kinds of abductees actually can perceive and know who these hybrids are throughout society and just know who they are instantaneously. They just know. Okay, and they look perfectly human, but sometimes some of them have the shape-shifty eyes that will do the slitty thing, the reptilian eyes, or the eyes will turn black instantaneously. And so one of the reports, since I can't name names, this is just an unknown, all right, saw one of these people in a particular working capacity, and the abductee person telepathically told her, the hybrid person, I know who you are, I know what you are. And didn't even say it out loud. She just said it telepathically. And then the hybrid who was on the job became so freaked out. I think their eyes turned black, like something really weird happened. I'm not sure. And then that person just dropped what they were doing and actually left their job. They freaked out and they left. So sometimes when they're encountered, they freak out because, you know, program is broken. They no longer have control and we know who they are. So that's pretty weird, but those kind of things are happening a lot now.
Yeah, it seems like a weak point in their programs or the way they operate.
Well, yeah. In fact, here's another weird thing, but it's how my mind works because I'm going off tangents of how are they doing this? Let's say if there are certain hybrids whose genetic frequency does not have a good enough match with the original anima, but still has a battery, or maybe doesn't have a battery, of an eternal spirit. And then so certain cloned hybrids, I kind of figured it out when I heard an interview that, well, he calls himself Contactee Abductee Mac Azura, I think is his name, and it may not be his real name, but and he had reptilian encounters as well as grays and military, I believe. But one of them was an observation of whether he was being shown or he was in a ship at the same time, when the alien grays, I believe, were abducting like a human abductee, and that they were finding ways to extract the golden life force essence of their spirit essence out of their heart chakras, like little bits, I don't know, maybe not a lot, and then they would transfer it. I don't know if they would transfer it to a black box or transfer it into something that would be held in these like jars and then stored. And then that life essence that was taken from hundreds of abductees would then be used to be placed inside the cloned hybrid alien human bodies as their spirit that animated them. Because if they have to do that, that means they don't have enough of the original blueprint to have an original eternal spirit anima. So that means they have to have thefted soul essence from hundreds of people in one body, and then they mind control that alien human hybrid, whatever it is, and they mind control it, whatever MK Ultra, whatever programming, to be and do and carry out a certain job. So its identity is thefted souls from a whole bunch of different people, thefted soul essence. So those people would have psychopathic personalities when confronted with, who are you? What are you? Why are you doing this? Because they don't have a real identity. See, that's like a freaking narcissist or worse, because that means they don't have a real, if this is true, okay, that means they wouldn't have a real, quote, eternal soul essence. They just have thefted life force. And if that's true, that's why a lot of these psychopathic ones, when you know the behaviors of narcissistic personality disorder and vampires, well, they have to act and behave and relate in a way in which they're always gathering and thefting life force, looshing, because they have to create the drama to feed on it, because they can't live without taking it from someone else because they're not connected to the source. You see?
Definitely. And that's getting back to where we began with the demiurge, and Hadi Mikoski says that in that creation story, there's a heaven, and many souls were seduced And for 9 days and nine nights, they fell through the hole in heaven the devil had created. God allowed this for those who wished to leave, but other souls, by accident, began falling through the hole, and so God sealed it. After the souls had fallen, they found themselves in the devil's realm without any of the good things he had promised. And remembering the joys of heaven, they repented and asked the devil if they could return. The devil replied that they could not because he had fashioned for them bodies which would bind them to earth and cause them to forget all about heaven. But now we're trying to get back to what Jesus had explained and came here for, and that is to get out of the reincarnation trap, which is aligned with what the Cathars were thinking. And the Pope didn't like that and genocided the Cathars. And so I would very much like to see what the Cathars were writing about in their manuscripts. Apparently they were destroyed, but I think they still have them. So
there's actually information out now on that in the Nag Hammadi. I don't know if they say much about that, but they believe that there was a real bloodline of Mary Magdalene and Jesus that was hidden, you know, in France and some of the European countries, and that they were identified and hunted, and they wanted to kill them all off, but they haven't been able to kill them all off. But I sometimes wonder if that's why certain people are hunted down and abducted and, you know, watched closely, that there might be a certain bloodline that could be, you know, people who are very aware and remember and would be a threat to the control system. But it also could be a correction to the whole problem. Because even in the Gnostic tractates, the whole reason, and it's kind of complex, that, you know, it came about by a mistake through Sophia, who had this aborted fetus kind of demiurge because she didn't reproduce without a consort. And it's kind of a weird story. But supposedly, the demiurge actually thefted a lot of her life force. And because it's thefted, something had to happen with the intervention of Christ as the true consort of Sophia to actually help correct the problem over a long period of time. So it's kind of like the wheat and the tares. We have a long time to recollect the thefted life force that's in many bodies now that was from Sophia, because we are her children also, supposedly. So once we go back to the original source that we came from, we'll be able to complete the extraction process of retrieving the thefted life force from this kind of a mistake thing. And then it'll be wrapped up, and that reality will be done with. There will be no more lower Pleroma. So that's the story, is that we came here actually as a correction to extract the thefted life force through some kind of process of life here, and then retrieving the life force that was stuck here. So I think it would have to be, we'd have to come back from the recycling somehow and just retrieve that life force. And so it can't be recycled anymore until there's no more or something. But I don't know, really. It's that's the myth, you know?
Evie, a few years ago, people were observing how once they thought of something, they would see an advertisement or reference to that object on their phone or a suggestion maybe in their video feed. And this is when they're away from their device, no verbal communication. This implies there's advanced mind reading going on and neurological link, some kind of telepathy, maybe interacting from the wireless micro and millimeter wave radiation devices to the human brain. What are your thoughts on this anomaly? And we're not told that this technology is all around us.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I've experienced that too, directly over and over again. I think it's called a read-write frequency overlay technology. The other researcher that I've only heard talk about it with a little bit of clarity is Harald Kautzwelle from Germany. He talked about this based on his understanding. Since he's a scientist, he could understand how it operates. But he called it a read-write technology that companies like Raytheon, which is military-industrial complex, already has, that could be implemented through frequency to connect with people and, you know, read-write thoughts, so it could read them and then it can write over them so that it can manipulate behavior as well. Most people, I think he said something like when they did these experiments way back with the read-write technology, which I think Robert Duncan probably knew a lot about that as well, the late Robert Duncan, that 70% of the population is pretty much an easy-peasy read-write manipulated, you know, majority. But the 30% or the 20% or whatever that couldn't, then they would experiment on them and then gang stalk and target them to see, you know, the canaries in the coal mine, right, who have unnatural minds that can't be as manipulated because they know something's ain't right or whatever. But I think it's our heart chakra, and it goes back to our heart chakra connected to our spirit, that if we are led by our heart chakra, which is a non-dual love, eternal spirit beingness, then if we could function more fully in that beingness, then we are not as easily manipulated to maybe behave in the ways that they want to compel us through this read-write technology. But it doesn't mean they still can't read what's on our mind, because I've experienced this numerous times that it's real. Not only that, but I know people who are very clairvoyant naturally. And these naturally clairvoyant people tend to be messed with more because they're witnesses. They're witnesses of things they don't want us to know. So they will be able to perceive clairvoyantly, like this exudate cloud thingy that comes out of the cell phone or computers that will have little particulates in it that go directly into the third eye and the head of the people and like link them like this liquid connection that links them to their devices.
What? So, I don't even know about that.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I've talked to several clairvoyants who see this, and then people who have NDEs, and then they're shown, okay, this is what's enveloping the earth, this digital technology and the cell phone addictions, so that the technology of the black, it's like the black alien black goo consciousness is what it is. It's like this dark alien black goo consciousness that shows up as these like black tubes and tendrils that is like connecting to people's heads and minds and bodies, and it keeps them connected to the consciousness and the hive mind of the black goo alien, you know, consciousness working through technology, so that people are not organically connecting to one another and organically connecting to the heart, spirit, anima through love that would shatter that control. So it's clear to me that technology is used to control people's behavior and their minds, and it's very dangerous because it, you know, takes advantage of our, you know, compunctions to be addicted to scrolling and addicted to information. So that's why, you know, if we can do our meditation practices and get away from technology and stay focused on love in the heart and lucidity, awareness of being aware, and your observer self, the more resilience we have to this kind of control system. So keep your heart deeply connected in an organic way in relationships. And if there's even one last thing I would say, and this is based on what Barbara Bartholik had warned us years ago, you know, 30 years ago now, or maybe, that they were doing something like a breeding out of love program that would have the effect of removing this from us so that we didn't connect as much with each other organically, and then maybe just not want to connect that way anymore. So this is happening with like the addiction to porn, the addiction to technology, the addiction to even some people who might be having experiences with aliens or these other beings, having direct sexual relational connections, so that they just no longer want to be with a human at all, and they no longer identify with being human. And that's the danger of the takeover, if you ask me. So I talked about this in my Dark Side of Cupid second edition, which has much more information, by the way. So I just want to make that as a last point to definitely get the second edition Dark Side of Cupid, which is available now on Amazon in many digital formats, so that is available. So for deeper insights to this entire phenomena.
I want to say thank you so much for being on In Other News, and thank you for all this incredible work that you've been doing for quite a long time. You're maintaining and collecting and holding on to very important information and sharing it constantly with your readers. Evie Lorgan is a professional hypnotherapist and counselor. She's the author of The Love Bite, Alien Interference of Human Love Relationships, and The Dark Side of Cupid. Evie, please tell listeners about your books and how to find more of your work.
Okay. Well, I still have an old-fashioned WordPress website at evelorgan.com, and I update my interviews and stuff up on my website, but also on a Alien Love Bite Telegram channel. I still have X, and I'm starting an Instagram, but I'm not good with social media, so most of my interviews actually end up on other people's channels, and then I just repost them on my website and what social media I have. But I am doing second edition of Dark Side of Cupid, which is already out in English and Italian, so it's out in Italian now. It's just like in the last week that the Italian version has come out because of the connections I've had it with Dr. Corrado Malanga's work. I wanted to have this available for the Italian people. And then the Love Bite, Alien Interference, the first book that I did, I'm doing a second edition with additional material in there as well to be due in another couple of months to be out with additional case studies and stuff about hybrids like what we talked about. So hopefully these will be out soon. And because I was hijacked, my book was hijacked and bookjacked, and I wasn't making any money. And so I had to do something by taking control and being the author and publisher of both books and updated versions. And hopefully another one after that about my own testimony and maybe other works that have not been in the written literature. So I'm working on it. And I'm glad that it's finally coming out. So just my website, yeah. And James Bartley, I do a lot of interviews with him on Cosmic Switchboard as well. So,
author Eve Lorgan, thank you so much for being on In Other News.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.